if we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime. The introduction to the volume 2 of our report explains that decision. First, the opinion explicitly permits the investigation of a sitting president because it is important to preserve evidence while memories are fresh and documents available. Among other things, that evidence could be used if there were co-conspirators who could be charged now. And second, the opinion says that the Constitution requires a process other than the criminal justice system to formally accuse a sitting president of wrongdoing.
Yes, it is Friday, May 31st, 2019. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. Each week, I talk to our capital muckraker in chief, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And yes, Robert Mueller speaks. Yeah, you heard him in the intro there. That was Robert Mueller basically telling Congress, nope, not going to be your circus monkey. He must have been listening to our special Tuesday edition of the podcast this week. Mueller basically made it crystal clear that the ball's in the hands of Democratic Party majority in the House. Impeachment is constitutionally available, is the constitutional available next step. But that will require the Democrats to actually exercise their power, not something they have a recent history of doing. Black voters in Philadelphia and around the country begin to make demands on those House members to move forward for impeachment. According to this new New York Times article published yesterday, there are people actually saying, like, hey, this is why we sent you here, to get the guy out of the office. What the hell are you doing? It's crazy. As 60-year-old Philadelphia florist shop owner Paulette Beal Harris put it, quote, it's time for Congress to do something. It's time for them to stop being afraid to do what has to be done for the country. Hey, what have we been saying? Apparently, Bernie Sanders finally heard the message, too. Speaking at a town hall in Nevada, Sanders explicitly called for impeachment hearings to begin. Nancy Pelosi and Jerry Nadler, chair of the Judiciary Committee, who would need to call for an impeachment inquiry, are still messaging, all options are on the table. Like it's some fucking like lead up to some attack in Iran, which they'll probably sign off on anyways. But we'll talk a bit about the Democrats' fear of their own power, definitely today. Huge developments in Supreme Court case about Trump administration's move to put a citizenship question on the 2020 census. Guess what? Won't be too much of a surprise, but turns out there's actual documentation saying that the reason why they want to do it is to suppress the Hispanic vote and give more weight to white voters. Yes, that's right. Thanks to the estranged daughter of GOP's, quote, Michelangelo of gerrymandering, Thomas Hoffler, or Hoffeller, who actually died last year, there is now that documentary proof that she found on some hard drives stashed away. Pretty interesting. Louisiana passes a radical fetal heartbeat abortion ban, becoming the latest addition to the right-wing moves to bring a case against Roe v. Wade to the Supreme Court. The state's Democratic governor, underscore Democratic governor John Bel Edwards, says he'd be thrilled to sign it. After Missouri's Republican governor signed that state's extreme abortion ban into law last week, the state's last remaining clinic offering abortion may be shut down today. It all depends on the outcome of Planned Parenthood's lawsuit currently before the judge. And as we go into press today, as we go to recording today, not sure when that ruling may come down. Supreme Court takes a pass on Indiana's extreme anti-abortion bill that would have banned abortion motivated by race, gender, or disability, such as Down syndrome. We're sure that Mike Terzai is throwing a hissy fit right about now. The Midwest continues to be ravaged by massive floods, tornadoes, and severe weather in a picture of our climate future. Even USA Today is headlining articles about the relationship between severe weather and climate change after this week's weather. U.S. Department of Energy decides to change the image of oil and natural gas because it's really not about the carbon emissions, it's about the image. So guess what? It's no longer fossil fuels. Now it's freedom gas and molecules of freedom. You can't make this shit up. Department of Energy was promoting the expansion of a liquefied natural gas facility in Texas. An assistant secretary for fossil fuel energy, Steven Winberg, said that he was, quote, pleased the Department of Energy is doing what it can to promote the efficient regulatory system that allows for molecules of U.S. freedom to be exported to the world. Shit. And that is precisely why the Sunrise Movement is calling for mass protests this summer and into the fall, particularly at the second Democratic debate in Detroit on July 30th. Sunrise Movement hopes to mobilize tens of thousands of young people to travel there and make sure that the Democratic presidential candidates make 2020 a referendum on climate action. And I am going to be doing my best job to be on the ground there in Detroit for those protests. The UK-based Extinction Rebellion, meanwhile, is planning to shut down Heathrow Airport with drones and road closures to demand immediate climate action and to stop the construction of yet another runway at the nation's busiest airport. California Assembly passes a bill to reclassify Uber drivers and other gig economy workers as actual employees, not independent contractors. This would be the first major push to kind of push back against this gig economy if it's approved by the Senate and signed into law. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern announces the world's first well-being budget. This budget would shift priorities away from growth to the well-being of the most vulnerable and New Zealand society as a whole. Man, she is freaking tearing it up. And Mitch McConnell, still an asshole. In today's PA Focus, Pennsylvania saw days of severe weather, including multiple tornadoes and significant flooding over the past few days. Pennsylvania averages about 17 tornadoes per year, something that I didn't know until reading up on this. But we are already at least 22, and that's before all the investigations of the what may have touched down on Wednesday are concluded. Harrisburg teachers, who have been working without a contract or a raise for over a year, were all set to go on a one-day strike today because of how the administration was trying to use the district's recovery plan to force a bad contract onto the union. The teachers say we're going to strike, and the threat had overwhelming support from the community, and it forced the administration to withdraw those plans and brought them back to the bargaining table. Direct action gets the goods. The things you learn working the polls on a local school board election, I'll tell you. I was working the polls for a Penridge school board election last week, and man, now I even have more questions about what the hell is actually going on in this school district. The things you learn. Hey, remember those Proud Boys and alt-right activists from the sports, beer, and politics guys? Remember that? Sean was talking about that quite a bit. Well, they're now getting involved in local Philadelphia politics. Vico, how do you say this guy's name?
Bertogli.
Bertogli made what?
Oh, sorry. I fucked that up.
Yeah, he's a Republican nominee for the Abington School Board, and Charles Mathis, a Philly GOP committee person who provided security for these rallies, is running the campaign for Philadelphia Republican at-large candidate Matt Wolf. So we're going to dig in a little bit on that. Today's segment three, the main news out of Japan. This is the last call. Main news out of Japan this week was that White House ordered the Navy to cover up John McCain's name on the destroyer named for him and his father. And that's because Trump was visiting there and he couldn't, like, the little snowflake couldn't be see John McCain's name. But you might have missed the fact that U.S. will now partner with Japan in landing humans back on the moon and establishing a permanent presence. Japanese companies have ramped up their play to be major players in the commercial space sector, including developing commercial lunar landers. And tomorrow, LEGO is releasing a special 1,087-piece model of the Apollo 11 lunar lander. That is about celebrating and commemorating the 50th anniversary of humans' first visit to the moon. One giant step indeed. Two big releases at Free Will Brewing tomorrow, the Double Race Against Time and Chatty Monks Brewing, which we'll talk about in today's last call. And there is a new documentary focusing on PA's craft brewing industry that was released this week. Poured in PA is a two-year journey visiting more than 50 Pennsylvania breweries. And the film is a production of Harrisburg-based GK Visual, and you can stream it now on Amazon Prime, even if Dick Yingling is in the film. So there you have it. So today, man, we've got a lot on the agenda. We're not going to talk about everything like that in complete detail because it's just way too much. So much has gone on. And this is, remember, this week we actually had a special Tuesday edition. So all that stuff that I just went through basically is like 3 days old. It's crazy. Sean, man, what's going on?
Not much. I actually had to come out of my basement for this.
Yeah.
Came out of my basement and the sun was out and there's no humidity in the air. There's a nice breeze. Turned off the air conditioner. You know, like, holy shit, what a week.
Holy shit.
What a past 3 days it's been.
Yeah, Sean was literally actually texting me back, messaging me back and forth from his basement as the one of the tornadoes touched down not far from him.
Yeah, I'm not trying to become a statistic.
Yeah, exactly.
like I was getting shit from some of my friends for like, oh, look at you taking cover in the basement, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
dude. It's like I was saying to you before. I was saying the same thing. My wife is like, oh god, she's rolling her eyes. I'm like, look, like Sean, like, I don't blame you, man. You don't want to be the guy who's going to be like filmed on the evening news, sitting there in traction in the hospital with like a 2x4 with a nail stuck to his brain, right? Saying I should have listened to the warnings. It's like, I don't know what I was thinking, but they can't pull this board out because my brains will leak out. I guess we should make sure that we listen in the future. And the anchor then turns and says, one more reason that we definitely need to trust our weather, right? I mean, it's like, come on, you don't want to be that guy.
Yeah, no, not trying to become that guy. But it's good knowing that Mueller listened to our podcast.
I'm loving it, man. I'm loving it. You know, I heard that he might be tuning in from time to time, but after we kind of said, what the hell, man? What are you doing? He comes out with gives a press conference. So, you can thank us, everybody. You can just thank us.
Yeah. Like the very next day, too.
I mean, I know, shit.
I mean, I think Mueller pretty much said, yeah. I mean, like, I thought, like, listening to it at the time, I thought he was just blathering. But, I mean, no, he said, I am not coming to Congress and expanding on what's in the report. Like, you know, do your job, pretty much, is what he said.
He did, right? But here's a couple things, right? One thing that, you know, there's... This is proof of a couple things, right? The Democrats, and I was telling you this before the podcast today, it just pissed me off, like, just to listen to Democrats talk about this stuff for a long time. Because, like, they've got this belief that, like, oh, the Mueller report has been released, right? So it's out there, and everyone's reading it, and slowly the American people are coming around to impeachment, as if this is a freaking natural process of the Enlightenment that will suddenly give them the go-ahead to go ahead with impeachment. They have to wait till, like, the American people are at 80% towards impeachment, and we're going to demand this of their members, and then they'll have no choice but to go forward with impeachment, and then that's how they're going to be vindicated. So that's the way people freaking work, is number one, like, you got to know this. Like, most Americans... Right? They read a lot, but they don't read that shit. they don't read like academic work, and they don't read kind of like wonky policy papers, and they don't read the Mueller report. It's the people that are only super paying attention to this. The value of Mueller going forward, there was some real criticism. Like, I think the Daily Beast had something about this, or Politico had something. It's like, yeah, he basically said what was in the report. But that's the point. The point is that people watch TV. They don't freaking read. So you got to put them up there. That was the most important part of it. It's like he just basically reiterated the major points there. But then suddenly it's like as if the light switch went on. It's like, oh, my God, Mueller's saying all this stuff.
And it's also like I think Will Bunch tweeted this a while ago. You know, like it was like the televised hearings that brought Nixon down. The power of television and that communications. And someone tweeted out like, yesterday or when that was happening, like, this is just powerful in the fact that, yes, it might have been 9 minutes long, but like that 9 minute speech went way further than any of the talk since the report came out.
Exactly. People got to get
the power of like him going on TV and telling people in the face, this is what's in the report. No, I am not coming to Congress. And if we would have said the president was vindicated, we would have said that in the report.
Exactly.
End of story. Like,
right. This is what, you know, I swear I teach this in my classes all the time. Right. Is like content and facts by themselves do not change people's mind and are not persuasive. You have to do something with them. And
I mean,
if you want
to, you know, Democrats act, they think that, oh, well, facts matter.
Well, this is, I mean, look, George Lakoff wrote about this in, like, in Don't Think of an Elephant, right? And I know a bunch of people got problems with George Lakoff and his, like, you know, framing is the answer, all this stuff. But there's a really important point about cognitive science, right? I mean, the important point is there is that, you know, and the problems that the errors that progressives and liberals make over and over again is they buy into this enlightenment like narrative that, like, you speak the truth, you state the facts, and the facts will speak for themselves. And he said, no, cognitive science says otherwise. Cognitive science says if people don't have a place to put it, right, and don't have a narrative that's constructed, right, or kind of around this, it'll just go on one ear and out the other. Not because they're stupid, not because they're kind of like belligerent, not because they're in denial. It's because the narrative that has been crafted that they have in their worldview doesn't have a space for that. So you have to create that space. And I would add to that is that you also have to be in a situation that you have to create it in a space where people are. Instead of saying, hey, look, there's a 400-plus page Mueller report, come and get it, right? No, you need to make the case actively to people. And all the statistics that shows you, like, where the polling was with Nixon before the hearings began and where they were after the hearings began, right? People's minds change when it's in a venue that they're paying attention to. That is not to fault people and say people are only they're too stupid to do stuff. That's not the point. Anybody who's, like, got a life knows that you're freaking busy, right? And if you're not kind of like geeks like us who are paying attention to politics all the time, is like you need people to come forward and kind of make that case and make it explicit. Because otherwise, guess what? The news media is not going to pick it up in a way that is kind of like digestible, right? And you're only going to get it on the edges of things, and it's not going to appear in your local newspaper, right? It needs to be in, like, bring in there. And the example I always give, if you remember, if the lead up to the Iraq War and after the Iraq War went on, there was all this stuff that started coming out about, oh my God, we were lied to, right? They actively created a lie about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, right? And that is a big problem, obviously, right? But nobody was paying attention. And Michael Moore came out with the film Fahrenheit 9/11. Right? It was a documentary film. It was shortly after 9/11, and people were, you know, or it was a year after it. People, the major theaters would not run it, right? Because they said, oh, the nation is too divided or whatever like this. So only art house shows and small theaters would run it. And then that documentary began to break every documentary record that, like on the books. Right, people were lining up. I lived in Allentown at the time, and that the 19th Street Theater in Allentown ran it, and they had to add like multiple shows over multiple days just to accommodate the number of people who went. And people were coming out of those theaters, and it was on all the local news stations, and they were kind of like appalled. They couldn't believe that this took place. Like, that Michael Moore, why wasn't the media doing its job, right? And the interesting thing about it is that after Michael Moore started getting pushback for Fahrenheit 9/11 and said, you're just making all this stuff up, he released a webpage with all his source material. And his source material was from places like the New York Times, the Los Angeles Times, the Miami Herald, the Boston Globe, right? They were from established kind of like journalistic pieces, right, that were doing the reporting. It wasn't that the newspapers were not paying attention and journalists were not paying attention, but it was not getting traction. It was usually on page 5 or 6 or something like this. And the fact of the matter is people are not reading the New York Times in the way that say, Democrats expect them to be reading them. But guess what they do? They watch freaking movies. Right. And they went and saw that movie and that turned everything. The case had to be made in a medium and a space and where the people are at. And this is precisely why you have these freaking hearings. But it's been blowing my mind about why Democrats think that if you look at Republicans, they're elected there and they're put in a position of authority. What they do with that is they exercise their authority. Right. That's what you have to do. You keep those muscles working. Right. What the Democrats do, they get the position of authority and they think that they're going to fall back on some sort of objective norms or ways of doing things. And then that suddenly through some kind of magic, right, people are going to see the light. Right? It's weird because like the Democrats behave as if politics is about freaking like signs from God, their objective God, even though the Republicans are the ones with all the kind of right wing like Christian nut jobs. It's so freaking weird and it drives me bonkers. Not to see Democrats in a position where they're saying we're going to exercise this. Now, I should say this Democratic leadership, I should say, because the new generation of Democrats that have been elected, right? Like Rashida Tlaib, like AOC, they are out there pushing this hard. And they're the ones who are making the case. And now it's up to the point where there's about 50, if not more, House members who basically signed on, yep, we need to move forward with inquiry.
Brendan Boyle came out this week. I mean, Madeleine Dean has been coming out. Susan Wilde. I don't know if Susan Wilde came out, but like Mary Gay Scanlon. Yep. Like, I mean, yeah, a lot of the Democrats, I think Whatchamacallit just came out. Dwight Evans. I mean, you're seeing people, even establishment Democrats. I mean, like, Dwight Evans is not the most progressive person in the world. You know, he's a very establishment figure. You know, same thing with Brendan Boyle. He's a very establishment Democrat in Philadelphia. Like, even they're starting to come out and call for this.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Evans is one of the ones who was featured in the New York Times article. Right? He's like, yep, every time I come out of every time I show my face, people say, why is this guy still in office? It's like the first thing's out of people's minds. Isn't that why we put you there?
Yeah, so.
But crazy, man. And it's like, you know, and, you know, again, this I got to say is like this is the one thing that like I wasn't sure, like the game that Sanders was playing on this one, like why it took him so long to kind of come out and actually do it. And even his, you know, he was at a town hall in Nevada yesterday or 2 days ago and basically at this town hall for seniors and then basically said, you know, he was asked the question. He said, yes, I think we should move forward with inquiry. But he was still kind of had that real hesitation. Right. And That has been surprising to me out of the Sanders campaign, because if anyone understands the need to kind of like craft and drive home and campaign on a narrative and an issue, it's Sanders. But he's been very cautious on this one. And, you know, maybe that's just a function of him having everything in the presidential campaign and kind of wanting to I don't know. I'm not going to even guess. But that was it. But, and then, meanwhile, you got you know, Nancy Pelosi and Jerry Nadler kind of sitting there being like, well, we'll see. All options are on the table, but I don't know.
I mean, it's the same people who also passed up on, you know, impeaching George Bush and trying Bush for war crimes. Like, I mean, like, it's – I mean, the thing is, like, to hold Trump to account, I mean, he has gone 40 years without anyone stopping him, anyone standing up to him. Right. And, like – you're allowing someone who is like pretty much like a tyrant, like to get away with this, like, you know, saying that like we will like wait for the elections to do this is not a reasonable excuse. That's not an accountability issue. Like, it's like his numbers are not going to go skyrocketing. I mean, come on now. Like, Bill Clinton was impeached over like a blowjob, pretty much. Like, that's not going to be, and got reelected. Like, and his popularity went up. That's not going to happen here.
No.
Like, I mean, like, actual crimes and like obstruction were committed.
Well, and it's like, look, there's, I can't, I have not yet heard an argument for not moving through that moved forward with impeachment at this point that seems persuasive to me. Like, I get,
Democrats,
I mean,
they're afraid of power.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, you know it. I said this earlier on, right? When after 2018, you know, about when we were first talking about this kind of like the impeachment question, things like this. I mean, even I was going like, well, okay, look, what's involved with this? What kind of impact is going to be? And wanted to kind of hear this. Wasn't kind of all in on kind of like going for impeachment. It was into kind of like investigating, right? But then they did that. And all the investigations that they've been trying to do have been just kind of like stymied because Trump is basically ordering everybody don't appear. And now you've got like them denying subpoenas, not showing up for like subpoenaed appearances. And then, you know, so the question is like, well, what happens now? Who's going to go arrest those people?
I, you know what? Like, that's the type of thing that should have happened. Like, Pelosi a couple weeks ago, instead of having a snide remark with Barr, should have had Barr arrested in the Capitol by the sergeant of arms.
Yeah.
Like, imagine like what would happen if he had Barr arrested,
right?
She had Barr arrested. Like, that's exploiting your power as the third most powerful person in the country. Like, you're going to say fuck you to a subpoena, and like, okay, boom, we're going to arrest you and hold you in contempt.
Yep.
Like, I mean, like, why is that so hard for the Republican or Democrats to do that?
Yeah. It's because they're afraid. They're free. They're making this assumption, the assumption that if they exercise their power, that they're going to lose support, which is, you know, again, and there's some, I get where that comes from, because look, there's a lot of Democratic voters, right? And people who liberals who would be, you know, they would clutch their pearls at that kind of behavior. Oh, my God, I can't believe she did that. All that kind of garbage. But you know what? You got to push past that. Right? Your new generation is not, they're not the pushovers. They're not the people that are going to just going to rely upon existing institutions and upholding the way things used to be. Right? Your new generation are people that have been screwed by that system, whether it's through debt, whether it's through an economy that is tanked, whether it's through offshoring and globalization, whether, I mean, you name the issues, and they're done. Yeah. Right? Maintaining decorum means squat. If you are not going to exercise your power elsewhere. So there you go. I mean, that's kind of where it's at right now. So they don't like it. Like the existing Democratic leadership does not like that. Well, look, this is a bed that they made. And you invited the freaking guests over. And guess what? They're going to sleep in it now. Right? And there's no room for them. Well, they're going to kick you out. That's the way it's going to be. Because, I mean, at the very least, because like what the argument, when they start saying things like, well, you know, the Senate's never going to convict them. That's not the point. We should work on those kitchen table issues that kind of brought us there. Oh, because the Senate's going to pass Medicare for all? No.
Because the Senate. LGBT protections.
Right. The Senate is not even going to pass freaking Schumer's kind of like no call list thing.
And also, I mean, like McConnell came out and said, yeah, you're fucking right. We're going to be, if a judge passes away and a seat opens up, you're damn right we're filling that thing. Like, yeah. It's like.
Well, I mean that blew my mind. Okay, the fact that he does this does not blow my mind. I mean of course that's what he's going to do. But the film of it, the video of him saying it, he had this like kid-like grin on his face. And it's like, you know, what happens if you have a justice retire, you know, and after what happened in the last election, you feel, you know, what would you do if a Supreme Court seat becomes open in 2020? And he like looks at big shitty grin. He's like, we're going to fill it.
Right? The fuck you think we're gonna do?
Of course you're going to.
And this is where, like, again, I'm gonna rail on Biden. Like, this is why his fucking unity tour is just bullshit.
Yeah.
Like, because Mitch McConnell just fucking laid it out right there. I mean, Mitch McConnell has no interest in working with Democrats. They're not going to come to their senses after Trump. It's not Trump. It's the party at large.
Exactly.
It is 40 years of this party, ever since the Powell memo, up until now, like just getting away with shit and not being held to account by the Democratic side. Like, yeah. This is the Frankenstein that they created, and Trump is just like the symptom. Like, this is like, Trump is not the problem or the issue. He is a problem and issue. The issue is the Republican Party.
Exactly.
And for people like Joe Biden to think that like Mitch McConnell is going to work with you because you two are friends. No, that ain't going to happen. Like,
it's just crazy. It's just crazy. Yeah. It drives me insane. It drives me absolutely insane. And I look at it like this as like, you know, and why is it the Republican Party more than anything else? Why does he need to kind of go and exercise the power? You look at what's going on, which continues to go on about the anti-abortion legislation that's kind of like taking hold across the country right now. I mean, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I'm sorry.
Also, you're about to say, like, you are also setting the precedent by not impeaching that future presidents can do whatever they want in office and not be held to account.
Right. Exactly.
And you're setting a very dangerous precedent.
Right. Exactly. And you know what? The only people that will abide by that precedent will be Democrats. The Republican parties have already shown that they don't give a shit about precedent. Yeah. And so the Democrats are going to set a precedent for themselves in the future to not act. Right? That's what's going on right now.
No, I mean, they set the precedent there. They set the precedent after they took the House in 2006 and not acting on Bush. And they set the precedent when not trying him for war crimes afterwards, saying that we need to move forward as a country and not open up these scars. Like, that is like, that. No, this is, this doesn't work anymore. Like, sorry, your time is up.
Right.
Shift up the pot. Like, it's...
That's right. Time's up. Remember that whole thing? Time's up. That applies across the board at this point. Time's up. Yeah. We're done. Because you know what? I think the vast majority of people that are out there, and myself, I include myself on this, are like, care less about decorum and more about being able to freaking pay for shit, being able to have the access to basic medical care, being able to kind of like do the baseline things that are necessary that the Republican Party has been raging war on for 40 years. That's what matters. That's what the new generation of activists and new generation of Democratic parties that just elected in 2018, they understand that. There's where the future is. And so the only question is when are these people going to get out of the freaking way, right, so that we can get there, right? And I think there is nothing more important than – I mean, the two things right now that we're seeing play itself out. Number one, the attack on women's rights, the attack on women's control over their own body, right, that is running like rampant. Like we said in the intro just yesterday, Louisiana just signs
you
like –
You saw this with Janice. You saw this with like the –
Exactly.
This is like a 30, 40-year plan for them to go after immigrant rights, go after worker rights, to go after Roe v. Wade.
Exactly.
I mean, like, they spent decades cultivating judges and lawyers to become judges.
Yep.
To overturn this for this moment. Like, this is – and you're like – and then your response is to do nothing or be a Democrat and join them. Like, and that's why people like Dermody in the House needs to go. That's why people like Brandon Markosik, who inherited – that seat from his daddy needs to go.
Yep.
Like, you know, if you're a Democrat and you're voting for this, or you're a leader and you're giving cover to Dems who are voting for this shit, your time is up.
Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Like, it's like, sorry, like, this is not like, yeah, like, this is it. You're done. Like, you vote for an abortion ban, you should be primaried, you should be kicked out of office. You're a piece of shit at that point. Like, if you're a Democrat, it does this.
Yep.
Like, there's just no other way to get around it. Like, you are ideological. It's what side are you on? Here's the line of sand. You choose.
Yep. I agree with you, man. Because you look at that, you look at what's going on with kind of the abortion bans, and it's absolutely like insane that they're all trying to setting up for the Supreme Court, a Supreme Court which Mitch McConnell, the same guy who said that he's going to go ahead and keep on filling this stuff regardless of what happens and when it is in the election cycle, because he made that happen by not even agreeing to take up the Supreme Court justice or Merrick Garland's kind of appointment by Obama before it left out, right? And now we're going to go. Now we got the two like worst freaking appointments we could possibly ask for. You got that on the one hand. On the other hand, you've got just what we started seeing with these kind of storms and everything like this happening across this country, right? We've got kind of climate change making itself known to the world, making and to everybody, to people who thought it was a hoax, people who didn't kind of believe that this was going to actually going to be problematic, are now coming around to that. And the only thing that's going to change our kind of dystopian future is massive public investment, Green New Deal, which I got my T-shirt on today, Green New Deal moving forward to dramatically kind of remake our economy and kind of the way that we distribute things in here. That's why the thing in New Zealand was so important, right, that you're talking about a well-being budget as opposed to a growth budget, one that is kind of like, you know, one is a firmly capitalist one and the other one's a firmly human one, right, that well-being budget. We're going to need that kind of stuff, and that is the heart of what's going to happen with the Green New Deal, and that does not take place. We never get there if we are not willing to exercise power. And I think if we want a Green New Deal, for example, we want to put an end to the attack on women's bodies, attack on women's control of their own bodies, attack on women's rights, then we have to be willing to exercise power. Right. And what is happening right now, there's a public display, right, of the worst case scenario of cowardice, best case scenario of kind of reluctancy and kind of wishy-washiness. And that does not play well for an electorate. Right. That does not play well to get people out and to vote, to mobilize your base and kind of expand the electorate and expand the kind of, you know, the kind of imaginary that we're going to need to do in order to kind of turn the tables on what is going on right now. And I think that comes right to start with it. When you start with the impeachment inquiry.
Yeah.
So. Oh, boy, Sean. Oh, boy. It's pretty freaking crazy. Well, hey, man, anything else you want to say about that before we take a little break?
No, nothing really.
Yeah, I figured I got to start shut my mouth now, or otherwise I'm just going to just do another round and start repeating myself all over again. All right, so we're going to take a little bit of break. I want to remind everybody the only way that we keep on doing what we're doing and we kind of expand our little kind of area of the world and both our impact and, you know, keeping the stories that matter to you on this podcast, right, on in the pages of Raging Chicken Press, the only way we could bring on new writers, like we have three new writers that are brought on right now, is for you to become a member. So become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. You just go to patreon.com/RC Press to become a member today. That is what we need to do. You got to keep the media in the movement in the media, and not rely upon some sort of abstract facts raining down from the heavens to change minds. We need to be aggressive. We need to be investigative. We need to bring back that muckraking spirit and to keep it alive as we move forward to 2020. So become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/RC Press today. We will be right back after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two.
On this day in labor history, the year was 1889. Nestled in western Pennsylvania was the community known as Johnstown. The town and surrounding area was home to 23,000 people, families of workers who labored in the region's booming steel mills. Those who lived in the town had to deal with the soot that fell on their homes from the billowing smokestacks of the mills. But just 15 miles above Johnstown, there stood a very different place. The South Fork Hunting and Fishing Club. This was an exclusive area of summer homes for some of the leading industrialists of the day, including Andrew Carnegie, Andrew Mellon, and Henry Clay Frick. The club's members enjoyed fishing and recreating on the 500-acre man-made Lake Conemaugh, the 72-foot-high, 930-foot-wide dam which created the lake was made of earth and in poor repair. Drainage pipes that were supposed to regulate the lake had been removed, sold for scrap, and were not replaced. Despite repeated warnings of the dam's problems, repairs were not made. And so, on a rainy day in May, the lake swelled. Recognizing the dam was in trouble, workers were scrambled to attempt to fortify the dam. But the efforts came too late. The dam failed catastrophically, hurling 20 million tons of water into the valley below. The wall of water reached 40 feet high and half a mile wide and carried the force of Niagara Falls. 2,209 people died in the flood, including 99 whole families. One body was recovered as far away as Cincinnati, Ohio. 1,600 homes were destroyed, and there was $17 million in damages. The site became the first peacetime effort for Red Cross relief led by Clara Barton. Not surprisingly, the South Fork Club was never held legally responsible. The courts ruled the flood an act of God.
Welcome back to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. We are now in our PA focus here, and you can't have much of a PA focus this week without talking about tornadoes and severe weather that impacted our entire area like nonstop for pretty much 3 days.
The whole entire state.
The whole state, yeah. The whole freaking state.
The whole state was under a tornado watch on Tuesday, besides like Erie and like Washington counties.
That was nuts. I mean, there were tornadoes that touched down out in Allegheny County, near kind of Indiana, Pennsylvania. There was a tornado that touched down up in Scranton. There was one in Quakertown, just north of Quakertown, right on the another one. Apparently, I don't know if it was the same one came down twice, touched down on the border between Lehigh and Bucks County. One right side of Harry. What's that?
Morgantown,
Berks County. Yep. Oh, is that Lancaster or is that Berks?
It's Berks. I think it's Berks. I don't know.
So you had
it's on the border.
Yeah, it's right on that border. So yeah, Morgantown, one that came down outside Harrisburg. It's pretty crazy, and it wasn't just the tornadoes, right? I mean the torrential rains. I mean, just to give you an example, we've had some bad rains. Last year was an incredibly rainy season. This year, like I had just been doing some work on the front of my house, just like repainting shutters and things like this, and had cleaned out my gutters like 2 weeks ago. Right, it's all cleaned. My gutters could not handle the water that was coming off the house, and it was overflowing and spilling over, right, on the gutters, right? I mean, that's how much rain was coming down in a short period of time. Callow Hill Road, which is kind of like, that kind of got flooded out. There were floods everywhere. And this is coming to Pennsylvania. And of course, if you just kind of like shift the gaze just a little bit to, you know, to the west and look at what's happening in the Midwest, I mean, it's like it's utter devastation. I mean, there are small towns in Oklahoma that are now islands. Like the only way of getting things in and out is by boat. These were not like, you know, on the edge of lakes. These were kind of like on hills where the Arkansas River has kind of overflowed and so on. And that is the kind of stuff that we're seeing now in Pennsylvania too as well. And like
the new,
what's that? Go ahead.
This is the new normal.
This is the new normal. And this is, you know, again, people start getting on us for kind of being hard on Tom Wolf, right, an administration for his kind of love affair with the oil and gas industry, right, not wanting to kind of like make a firm commitment until very, very recently to kind of go hard on climate action. This is why. And, you know, again, it's – look – I understand that climate change is an abstract thing and it's easy to put out of your mind. I just hope to God that we're not going to sit here and have to wait until what we just saw this past week intensifies and becomes more routine before we have any kind of action. Because by that time, we're just going to be like living on the brink of climate dystopia for a while.
Yeah. And I mean, like we were talking about this beforehand, like this just set up for like the perfect, like, it was these storms were the perfect setup. You know, the South has been unseasonably warm, shocker, like hot,
yep,
above record temperature, above like average temperatures. The West has been getting snow the past couple weeks.
Yeah, you know, Denver got 3 inches of snow. I mean,
yeah, like, and like,
but Denver's in the mountains, man.
it's called the Mile High City for a reason.
It wasn't even fucking snow. It was all an illusion, a hallucination.
But, like, I mean, like, San Francisco got, like, the most amount of rainfall, like, ever in the past few days. Like, over, like, what they would get normally in a year, they got, like, in a week. And, like, that unseasonably cold weather has been creating these storms moving out west. And then you had an ocean breeze coming in, land over, like, the... an ocean front that was pushing all the way into like Bucks County and Montgomery County and like where these outbreaks were at. I mean, like, yeah, I mean, like we're seeing like this is just going to become the new normal.
Right.
And we have an administration that wants to double down on fossil fuels, that wants to, you know, you think that fracking is the panacea when we've known for like a decade now that like natural gas is a bridge fuel to nowhere.
Right.
Like, all it does is just increase methane emissions. You know, methane emission is a lot more potent than natural gas. And once the methane bonds break, it then becomes CO2. Like, so we're talking about, like, methane is a lot more reflective or a lot more potent, a lot more effective greenhouse gas at trapping heat in, and then it becomes CO2.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
I mean, then like this point, I mean, like what else is there to say? I mean, we're beating like a dead horse at this point.
Well, I know. And that does.
It wears on you.
it does. And it gets dispiriting. Right. But it's, you know, again, it's like, you know, what is the kind of like equal and opposite reaction here? Right. I mean, that's what gets more dispiriting for me than anything else is that, you know, you've got this crisis happening here and the pushback is nowhere near to where it needs to be. Right. And it's just as you said, right? I mean, this is a bridge to nowhere. This is short-term thinking, right? And again, I understand that pipelines are good union jobs, right? Many of them could be good union jobs, right? The point, though, is not therefore let's protect the pipelines because they're good union jobs. It's like, no. Let's expand good union jobs to one other sectors of the economy and ensure that the transition moving forward is going to rely upon union labor. I mean, that is not a hard thing to do, but it requires organizing and political will. But that's what's got to happen at this point because it is, I mean, I was telling you the story before we got on today. It's like, you know, I've been back and forth, you know, we go up to around the Ricketts Glen area quite often. There, that is where I want to say it's Atlantic Sunrise Pipeline, if I remember. I think I'm right about that. But there's a pipeline that was being constructed, and I've talked about this on the podcast before. You're watching huge areas that are going on. The pipeline runs through several wetland areas. It runs right next to Ricketts Glen State Park. Right. And there's new compressor stations that have gone in there. And there's been three tornadoes up there over the past year. Right. And we were just up there about last week and a half ago. And a tornado ripped through. Right. Not when we were there, but before when we got there, you got to see the path of destruction. And it was like literally a few hundred feet away from where the pipeline and the compressor stations was. I mean, that's just luck. Right, that it did, that didn't hit that, and that's a pipeline that just got built. And that, again, this is not like a once in a lifetime thing. It's like, you know, you even stopped yourself like early on. You were about to say the perfect storm, but you're like, well, actually, it's the new normal. I mean, the perfect storm scenario doesn't even work anymore because it's going to be, this is going to be consistent.
I mean, we saw it last year with the deluge. Like, we got out here in Harrisburg with the Susquehanna almost overflowing in the middle of the summer. Like, because I mean, there was like a river of water. Vapor just running up the East Coast, like
literally,
yes, like literally, that was just dumping like just deluges of rain. I mean, it's yeah, it's shocking. Like, yeah, I mean, like, yeah,
it's shocking and it's sobering at the same time, right? I mean, it brings it back home. This is why, you know, again, I mentioned
the administration is doing absolutely nothing,
right?
I mean, it's we can't, you can't embrace fracking and natural gas. And then try to claim that you're being an environmental advocate at the same time.
Exactly.
That's how it is.
Well, this is why, you know, I'm so glad to see, you know, I mentioned this in the intro, but like the Sunrise Movement and the UK-based Extinction Rebellion is planning, is you know, they're all youth-based movements, right? A lot of these kids, you know, some are kids, right, are acting, right, even though they can't vote. They're having more of a political impact, and they're demonstrating and showing us the way. And as part of this kind of mass action they're calling for at the Democratic debate, and also there's a call for, I want to say it's September 24th, I'll have to look into that again, but for a kind of mass action in the fall. And they're basically encouraging, like, you know, older folks to get involved too as well. I mean, it's like, really? You got the youth is looking as like, okay, people, time to get off the freaking couch and kind of join in, because this is about all of us. That's the kind of action that's going to be absolutely necessary. You know, and it's, you know, again, it's, I mean, I don't know what else to say about that, Sean. I mean, just, this is dramatic action. If you're in the natural gas camp, you are in the kind of, climate catastrophe camp, and it's simple as that.
Yeah.
So crazy, crazy, crazy. Well, I mean, other than the kind of like dramatic weather that had Sean kind of like in his basement, right, and had me trying to calm my kids who were told to shelter in space and in place at school for like 45 minutes, there was nearly a different kind of storm in Harrisburg in the school district there.
Yeah, I was getting ready to dust off my in solidarity with app scuff button and hit the picket lines today. A couple of my friends are actually pretty upset that this didn't happen, because it was would have been like their first strike to go protest at, or not protest, or cover. Uh-huh. But so Harrisburg school teachers have been working with a contract for almost like over a year now without one. They've been getting pay raises. There's a whole host of issues with the administration. There's a corrupt administration that's been put in place by the previous, we have a school board that goes back to Linda Thompson, who was just an atrocious mayor in Harrisburg. She stacked the school board, was able to get the school board stacked with, people from her camp who are just, you know, this corrupt in that political machine. They have one superintendent who was actually like blaming teachers for being assaulted by students. Well, maybe it's something that teachers are doing wrong.
Yeah.
If they get punched or spat at. You had, as the election results came in, as like before this, you had the school board was refusing to allow the auditor general to look at their financial books. When the union came out and said, no, we actually support this. We support this audit. It's a very top-heavy administration, full of political, full of grift. They hired this guy named James Ellison, who should have been put in jail down in Coatesville. And now he is the school solicitor. And then after this, like, the school board just gets wiped out. And as the school board was getting wiped out in the primary elections, the superintendent fires fired the interim HR director who was actually making headway with the teachers union, with the teachers, someone like to get stuff done. Like, it actually had a competent person in place. And the school board superintendent was like, no, we can't have competent people here. So they fired her last week as the school board's getting decimated. And, you know, the school, the teachers like said, no, we're going to have 1 day strike.
Mm-hmm.
This corrupt administration is trying to use the recovery plan to force to not even negotiate or bargain a contract, but force a contract through political or through budgetary maneuvering onto the teachers, which would have had like pay cuts and stuff like that. And the teachers called for a 1 day strike, and this forced the administration to withdraw these proposals and bring them back to the bargaining table. And it's almost the type of thing where I can't wait till like the actual new school board members come in December, mm-hmm. and just clean out this whole entire administration and start anew.
So that is actually going to happen then. So you've got new board members that are coming in the fall.
Yes. New board members are coming in. All five incumbents who are part of the corrupt political machine from Lyndon Thompson were wiped out. Pretty much, you know, all five of them, all five incumbents that were up lost. They lost handedly too. So they only need to flip two seats to have a majority on the school board. They now have all five. A bunch of newly elected school board members came out in support of the teachers union and the support of the strike. And said, like, listen, yeah, no, like this should happen. You know, it you don't want to get to the point where the union has to flex its muscles. But you know what? We support that because obviously they've been negotiating in bad faith.
Well, there you have it. Well, I am sorry that you didn't get a chance to go out and cover the strike, but
yeah, I mean, and also like this strike, the teachers had overwhelming support from the families, from the parents and students. And I really think this was going to be a test run, see what could happen in the fall. So yes, definitely a victory for teachers. We'll see what happens. We'll see if they continue to negotiate in good faith. And if not, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a strike in the fall.
Well, you know, I mean, I have to say, is like, you know, this is kind of one of the effects that we've got of all these national teacher strikes and all the actions that have gone on is like now suddenly I think that that's helped to kind of embolden some teachers, right, districts kind of around the country, right, in Harrisburg included, to begin thinking about, wait a minute, we don't need to eat shit anymore. We need to kind of like build that connections with the community, get support from the community. And frankly, the community has become educated on the value of teacher strikes too, as well as part of some of the national strikes, or I shouldn't say national strike, but some of the ones in Kentucky and the surrounding areas, to kind of look at teachers and teacher unions in different ways too. So that's, I mean, it's a really positive dynamic. And the fact that they came out and said, no, we're going to have this strike. And then that is kind of, they didn't even need to go on strike in order to, kind of win some important stuff is, you know, that tells you where we are.
Back to the negotiating table.
Yeah. So at this point, we're no closer to a contract at this point though, right?
No, but it forced the administration to withdraw the proposals and the changes they were trying to push through using budgetary maneuvering and stuff like that. So, but a lot of the new members of the school board supports the teachers and wants them to get paid. And one of the issues that happened over this past several like months was new teachers coming in and making more money than the teachers who already had the pay freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, yeah, like, just really bad decisions and creating a bad workplace environment. And, you know, like, Harrisburg lost, like, 200 teachers within the past several years.
Jesus.
Because of this inept administration.
Yeah.
So it's, like, it finally hit the boiling point. The teacher unions, they organized with the developers, and they pretty much, like, slaughtered the school board and got the people in that supports them, which is good on them.
Yeah, good on them indeed. Good on them indeed. Well, speaking of school boards, as like I mentioned this a little bit on a special. I don't know. Do you have anything else on that? I'm sorry.
No, that's pretty much it.
Yeah. So I mean, mentioned this in our kind of special Tuesday edition of Out the Coop podcast that I would talk a little bit about it. But it was interesting. This is the first time that I've worked the local polls here in the Penridge School District area, like in the Berksey area. Since I moved to this area, I did some of this stuff up in Allentown when I lived up in Allentown. But just kind of moved down here, had kids, and that took up a ton of time and everything like this. But now I was actually much more involved with the school district and all this kind of stuff. And this has been a really important school board election here in the Penridge School District. Is that I'll just tell you my way into this was. If you remember, there were protests by high school students across the country for the kind of March for Our Lives, which was basically after the Parkland shootings, that students basically had one-day walkouts, right, where they kind of would walk out of their schools and protest. That would hold student strikes and so on across the country. When here in Penridge, there were about 225 students who walked out of classes that day, and they were kind of forced to give detention. Right, over kind of several weeks. And this became a huge issue in the area. As a matter of fact, I got national coverage. And we talked about this in the podcast before. I got national coverage. The Penridge students, especially some of the kind of leaders who went to the D.C. for the National March for Our Lives march, got to meet the Parkland activists. The Parkland activists were on Twitter giving shout-outs to the Penridge students. It was really something else to see this all develop. My neighbor's kid was also one of those students who got detention and walked out. And I was the guy who was like, they had to go away or something like this. And so they asked me if I would kind of transport him to detention. And so I was like, yeah, absolutely, I'll do that. And while I was there, I actually kind of like, had my camera and things like this, took some pictures and reported a little bit on it for Raging Chicken. In that context, as those students were organizing and stuff, there was this kind of brewing controversy from some members of the school boards, in particular Joan Cullen, who is kind of the director of the school board right now, or one of the directors of the school board now, and Megan Baines Clemens, who had been newly elected to the school board. But Joan Cullen in particular had been just attacking those students for kind of walking out, calling them unpatriotic, say basically, why don't you go back to, whatever, go to, don't like it, love it or leave it kind of garbage, right? And attacking individual students. It was like, it blew my mind. But then what got worse is that as you started following some of the stuff in her Twitter feed, is that you saw that she was actually like retweeting, right? Because this is all happening in the midst of the 2016 elections, things like this, she's retweeting like white nationalists, right? And I was like, holy shit. And then so I'm like, whoa. But, again, for the point, I was like, whoa, what is going on here? And then there were these school board elections. They basically forced out some of the members of the board and in this kind of like very public way. And they were kind of like horrible to her publicly at these meetings and kind of forced out the old leadership, were screaming at her and saying horrible things about her in public at these meetings. And that was kind of like on YouTube. And I was seeing that. I'm like, oh, my God. It's like, so not only do you have like this political like white nationalist edge kind of stuff going on, members of the school board, but you also have just at the pure level of like, this is a school board that is making decisions over like my kid's school, right? And they're just horrible to each other, right? And they're saying horrendous things, and I'm like, I do not want these people in a position making decisions over the school district, right? So I began finding stuff out. But, again, anybody who's ever tried to get involved with local politics, right, and you're not already connected to a kind of a community group that's connected to this, it's harder to find out information about kind of local candidates than it is national candidates, right? So, again, I've been poking around for a while. And finally, there was the primaries were taking place, Republican Democratic primaries took place last week. And I came across, some new candidates who are running for office. They're kind of organized around One Penridge. Well, it was kind of how they're branding it. They're running together as a kind of like a slate. It's people that are looking forward to kind of like, one being bringing sanity to the school board. And actually, making sure that there's not going to be school closings, because I guess there's been some rumblings about that. And making sure that, the school board is doing what it's supposed to do. It's going to work for everybody, not just kind of like, a political agenda. It was really wild watching the same kind of politics that we see at a national level make its way into a school board election, right? Make its way into kind of the school board stuff right here in my hometown. So I got involved with that and stuff, and I was actually working at Joan Cullen's polling place, And, you know, she's perfectly fine that day. You know, I talked to her a couple times and things like this. And so it wasn't like a bunch of, but it's wild how deep the kind of conservative media, the right wing media in particular, not just conservative media, but how deeply that's made its way into sections of Pennsylvania. I mean, in my area. So some of the conversations I had with people were just kind of filled with conspiracy theories. I mean, I had this one guy just kind of come up to me and tell me about how the Howard Zinn Education Project is bringing communism into our schools. Right? I mean, literally. And he came up and we talked like the really.
I know, that's like a trope that's been around for like decades.
Exactly. But it's, you know, he comes up and he's like, you know, we start chit chatting because, you know, you're approaching talking to people from the polls. And I should say all candidates, both the existing school board members and these candidates from Wendpenders are running. They were all running on both tickets. So they're all running on Democratic ticket, all running on Republican ticket. So, you know, you're talking Republicans and Democrats like in this and even in the primary. And so you start this conversation. And it's like, you know, you're a nice kind of charming guy. And then it's like. Concerns me is this Zen Education Project. I'm like, holy shit. You go from like, oh man, it's finally we got to beautiful weather and things like this to like Zen Education Project is kind of bringing communism into our schools. I mean, it's just wild, right? And it's wild about how deep that goes. I mean, one of the guys who was campaigning for one of the candidates for Hilltown Township was out there talking about about telling stories about, yeah, remember when Hillary called us all deplorables? Well, blah, blah, blah. And this is what we did. And this is how we made fun of it. And this is how we did this. So, I mean, all that stuff was kind of right there. And it's like these people are not, you know, they're not some sort of character that you find in some sort of cartoon character, you know, that, you know, that's easy to identify. These are the kind of people that you just kind of, you know, pass by on the store every single day and are perfectly pleasant and nice. But then the ideology has made it so deep and the conservative media has gone so deep. So that's just kind of really interesting. And, you know, some of the things that people had said to me, again, what this is about, I'm not sure. But apparently there's been rumblings about school closings, as I mentioned earlier. There's been real concern about the behavior of some of the school board members and things like that. That's what I kept on hearing from voters that were coming out. And that got me kind of more and more interested in what's happening in local politics. So chances are you're going to hear a little bit more from me about some of this stuff moving forward as I try to pay attention to some things that are going to happen here locally. I actually got to talk to a student, Anna. I'm spacing her name right now, but she was actually running she was running as a Democrat. Maybe she's running on both tickets too as well. But she was one of the students that got detention for Pennridge 225. And she got activated. She took a gap year after she graduated from high school. And now she's back in the area and kind of running for school board coming up. A lot of the people who are campaigning for One Pennridge, which was really interesting talking to some of those folks too, is at different polling places, were former Pennridge students, right, who are not long out of high school and saw what it was going on with the school board, right? There's all, you know, the coup on the school board. It's wild. The stuff going on. And they heard about it. Oh my God, this was my school district. This was my school. And I've got to get involved to make sure this doesn't happen again. So there's some interesting dynamics that are happening, like, you know, kind of in this area of Bucks County, where there's contested stuff happening at the school board thing. So I'm going to stay involved through the fall and hopefully bring you updates of what's going on with that. And we'll see where it goes. But, you know, I wanted to encourage that. I wanted to kind of foreground this just to say, like, look, you know, get involved with those local elections. Right. Get involved with the school board. Right. Get involved with this. I mean, they did this up in the Lehigh County. They did something in Allentown and they won seats on the school board. Right. Some DSA backed candidates and so on in Lehigh County, in Allentown and Bethlehem and things like this. You've got, you know, you get involved at the local level. Not only are you going to kind of get behind candidates that are doing good, but you're also, that's where you're going to build your community of resistance. That's where you're going to build your community of kind of in your organizing. That's where you're actually going to be talking to people, like real people where they're at, not just in a kind of a social media environment, or not just talk about national politics, but really thinking about where the rubber hits the road right there in your community, right, where you're embedded. So that's my kind of shout out to all of you. So, well, speaking of other local politics, Sean, and I know I butchered this in the intro, but Proud Boys, man. Proud Boys here in PA.
Yeah, so there is the sports, beer, and politics stuff that we've been following for the past couple years.
Give people a little primer on that one so they know what you're talking about, just to make sure.
Sports, Beer, and Politics is an alt-right blog, Facebook group, that's been throwing these like Patriot Prayer-type rallies in Pennsylvania. basically throwing these rallies with like actual Proud Boys Alan Sweeney to try and goad the other side into fights and to like propel their like views out there and saying, you see the intolerant left and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
A couple of these activists, one's Charles Mathis. He's a Philadelphia GOP committee person. It's the best way of putting it is he did security for them and was like in chat logs, you know, talking about doing security for these Proud Boys, talking to Alan Sweeney directly. He is running the GOP's he's a campaign manager for Matt Wolf, who is a candidate for the Philadelphia at-large Republican seats or the at-large minority seats. So in Philadelphia, the way city council set up, you have two seats that are specifically designated for minority parties. So usually they're filled by Republicans. David O is one of them, who Republicans went after for his support of the sanctuary city. And so Matt Wolf is running for the spot. He will be on the final ballot in November. And then you have this other person named Vico Bertogli from Abington School District, who's an alt-right member. I filmed him at the Scott Wagner Town Hall last year wearing his red hat. Been following him for a couple of years online and tracking him. And he made it onto the final ballot for the Abington School District as a Republican. So, you're seeing what happens when this is what the Republican Party is becoming. And it's not just like these are Republicans in like, you know, rural areas that are the racists and stuff like that and perpetuate the racism. No, these are Republicans everywhere that are perpetuating this racism. They're doing it in the urban areas and they're doing it in the suburbs. And they're also doing it out in the more rural areas. I mean, it shows you what they're actually becoming.
Yeah. And they're, here's where the action is, right? At the local school board level, right? The local city level, where these folks are kind of beginning to make the, you know, I think you see what's happening with this, with that right wing development, kind of running candidates on the one hand, well, twofold, right? You see this kind of expansion in a couple different ways. One, I was thinking about as you were talking about this, like on the we talked on Tuesday about the charter schools, and you know, initially it was like, you know, these individual charter schools, and now we see these larger organizations establishing charters and putting together what is kind of like, you know, shadow school districts now. Right. By networking those things, it's going to that next stage. And here you have some of these kind of, you know, these white nationalists, and you've got some of these alt-right folks who are also now, getting involved directly in kind of local politics.
And also, I had a conversation with Daryl Lamont Jenkins a while back, and he said it correctly. Like once we were covering the Identity Europa stuff, the Identity Europa members of today are the Republican electeds of tomorrow.
Yep, that's right.
And he's 100% correct. For someone who's been following the anti-fascist movements or the fascist as an anti-fascist for a couple decades now, he is 100% correct. They're streamlining themselves right into the party.
Yep. There you have it, man. There you have it. Well, I don't know what to say. Although we got our work cut out for us, but you know, good thing, you know, that a lot of these elections are happening, you know, this is an all like, you know, whatever off year election. A lot of them happening now, but it is tremendous opportunity to get involved now. And I encourage people to get involved for the elections that are coming in the fall for these local elections, because that'll connect you to an organization that will connect you to a group of people, as you kind of move into 2020. We need to put a spotlight on the stuff at the local level. Like, this is frankly one of the reasons why I think it's so important to try to expand the kind of work that we're doing with Raging Chicken, to get people in different locations where they've been digging in on this stuff. But, you know, Sean, you know this as well as I do. It's like, you know, not everybody is kind of like, this is not in everybody's wheelhouse to do this kind of work, right? So we're always kind of looking for folks that are kind of interested in digging and doing this kind of like, you know, a little bit weedy, but a kind of more investigative work and kind of reporting on the way the connection between these larger national trends and also what's happening really right down the street from all of us. So Raging Chicken Local, everybody. Raging Chicken Local. So crazy. Man, is anything else going on around PA?
No, that's pretty much it. Legislation, the legislature comes back this week. And Wednesday, I believe, or Tuesday, June 4th, whatever June 4th is. There's going to be a big day of action in the Capitol pushing for a minimum wage where people are going to be lobbying their legislators. We the People will be hosting this. It's going to be a lobby day, and there's going to be a big rally at the end. So that's going to be really fun. I'm looking forward to it.
Fantastic, fantastic, fantastic. All right, well, everybody, well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. We will be back right after this message with this week's last call. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull-no-punches, progressive reporting, and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back, everybody, to this week's Out the Coop podcast last call where we talked about space news and beer and other kind of cool stuff that's going on that does or does not have to do with kind of politics in the world going to shit. But this thing, you may have heard, obviously, about the all the attention and the outrage going on in Japan this week because Trump got his foo-foos hurt because they were trying to prevent Trump from getting his foo-foos hurt and going off on some tirade because there is a naval destroyer that is out in Japan. And Trump was visiting Japan, and they didn't want Trump to see the destroyer or his name on it because he can't stand John McCain, even though John McCain is dead. So they covered it up. And not only did they cover up the name so he couldn't see it on the destroyer, they did not allow the sailors on that ship to actually attend his event, which was like, are you freaking kidding me? But so there you have it. But that might mean that you may have missed the fact that the U.S. is now planning on partnering with Japan in the missions towards the moon. Remember that NASA has now upped its timeline to try to get back to the moon, people on the moon by 2024. And Japan is apparently kind of all gearing up for the commercial space race. And they've got some companies out there, particular ones that are developing commercial lunar landers. Right. Independent for-profit companies of lunar landers. And they are trying to kind of get their foot in the door. NASA basically is saying that, look, since we rushed we pushed up the date for going back to the moon. Originally, it was maybe 2028, but they wound 4 years earlier. Since we're kind of pushing that up, well, we're not going to be able to include anybody else into our planning. We're going to have to do it alone. But that's going to open up a whole bunch of stuff, a whole bunch of possibilities for kind of international companies and governments to get involved. Particularly if you remember, I was talking about the Lunar Gateway before. The Lunar Gateway will be, basically a kind of international space station that will be orbiting around the moon that will provide that kind of like, that docking and between kind of Earth and the moon. And then Japan is all ready to go. So they talked about that, and I'm sure they signed away good portions of our futures with that. But there you have it. But what I'm really excited about is that tomorrow Lego is releasing a 1,087-piece model of the Apollo 11 lunar lander. And this summer is the 50th anniversary of the lunar landing. That is a freaking huge thing in my mind. I'm super excited about it. I really wish I could get to Houston, frankly, this summer to actually be part of some of the festivities, just because I just think it's a marvel. But, you know, at the very least, I'll have my Legos so for the lunar lander. If you remember, I've talked about this before, my daughter and I built the Saturn V rocket, the Lego Saturn V rocket. And that was like, I can't remember how many pieces. That was a huge one. And so that's kind of like in our window. So the lunar lander is going to go next to that. But when I saw that it came up one of my feeds just a couple days ago, I was like, oh, my God, must have. So this was for me, Sean, like this Lego lander. Right. It gave me that kind of itchy feeling, kind of like what you're getting right now with a camera lens.
Yes,
because I know that since you've been taking all these pictures of the night herons and you're out there, that you've got to be itching for a new one.
Yes, I am actually. So, like, I just want one more lens to, like, round off my...
I just want one more. Just one more, Daddy.
So looking to get a new camera lens probably within the next couple months. Looking at a 35mm prime lens, 1.4 aperture, mm-hmm. which is, like, a pretty fast camera lens from Canon. It's one of their best lenses, and pretty much I think that's, like, really all I need in my bag at this point is just those two lenses, the 70-200 and the 35mm. Looking forward to it. But those night heron pictures came out pretty cool.
They're awesome, yeah. I mean, if you check out Sean's Instagram and his Facebook page and his Twitter account. He's been posting these pictures of these night herons, and you've got a kind of like a bit of a fascination with them, right? No, I don't mean that. I just mean that because, like, they are. I mean, you said in one of the pictures you posted that they're just really kind of interesting and some strange birds.
Yeah, I mean, like, they are, like, they're only migrants. So, like, they're actually a fairly common bird, like, down south in the wetlands mm-hmm. and on the coastal plains and stuff like that. But, like, for up here, this is, like, the northernmost reach of their breeding area. Mm-hmm. So, like, this neighborhood is their only, like, Midtown. Like, they're actually, like, really sociable animals.
Mm-hmm.
And Midtown Harrisburg has a bunch of old-growth sycamore trees, which is what they nest in.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it just happens to be, like, the right conditions. There's, like, all these sycamores are within, like, 300 feet of the river, pretty much, up and down the Midtown neighborhood, on, like, second, third, and all these alleys in between. I know, like, they come back every year, April, like, literally, like, April 1st, first week of April, they come back, they nest in the same tree, like, and that's what's pretty cool, like, mm-hmm. the same partners come back to the same trees, the same nest in those trees every year, and, I mean, they're just odd creatures.
Yeah.
Like, they look odd. I mean, like, you don't think they're, like, herons at first when you see them, but, I mean, like, I saw a fledgling out there. A couple mm-hmm. days ago, which was pretty neat, walking up, and you can get within like 15 feet of them and they will not move. So, I mean, they're pretty used to like human interaction.
Yeah.
And I think like Harrisburg is maybe like one of only a few urban populations in the country, which is also pretty neat.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, they're definitely like, it's cool. I mean, they're odd. They're an odd looking bird, and they're just an odd, like, it's an odd situation, nature thing.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah. So do you actually out there talking to them and stuff, Sean?
Yeah. They actually know my name.
Sean. They come running over to you.
It's actually pretty neat. Like, they don't go to wild. They usually don't see them in Wildwood Park at all.
Hmm.
Like, which is like the wetland.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they're just like, they're right off the riverfront. And they will be on the river walk, like, at nighttime or in the evening hour, just sitting there chilling, eating food. Like, so, yeah, it's pretty neat. I'm probably going to go out tonight and walk around for a bit just because of how nice it's been.
Yeah.
And all. or how nice it is now.
Well, how nice it is now, right. Exactly. I mean, it's like you almost it's like, you know, it's almost like an obligation at this point to go out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
To go out and enjoy some of the day because it's been so insane this week.
Yeah. But no, I'm definitely looking forward to getting a new lens and possibly spending my 30th birthday in Detroit.
Yeah. So Sean and I were talking about this ahead of time. So that we have got, well, number one, we should say that, you know, we're going to be at Netroots Nation coming up in July 11th through the 13th.
Can't wait for that.
What's that?
I cannot wait for that.
Yeah, it's going to be freaking awesome. So if you are not going yet, you should really, if you can, the Netroots Nation in Philadelphia, that's 11th through the 13th. And the trainings and the panels, the keynotes look fantastic. It's an amazing networking opportunity, but more, you know, it's really kind of like perfect timing to be in Philadelphia for this kind of, I don't know, it's kind of like, it's like fill up your tanks to get ready for 2020. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like these are kind of groups of folks that was born out of the kind of the Netroots, the kind of the emergent kind of like online communities, progressive online communities. We went to one. God, it was how long ago was that, Sean?
At least 7 or 8 years ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. It's like out in Providence, Rhode Island. And it was freaking amazing.
I mean, right after we launched the chicken, like that following year.
Yep. And you remember that one panel? As we went to that one panel, when there was actually Sam Cedar, there was Cliff Schechter, right? There was I'm forgetting her name. She went up in Alaska. What's that?
I was going to say Beth Becker. No.
No, it wasn't Beth Becker. But there was this one panel. These are people that, like, now I listen to their podcasts all the time. Like, but back then I kind of knew who they were. But, you know, seeing that they were there. You know, they've been part of that community for a long time. And this is just going to be fantastic. So we're going to be there for the 11th through the 13th. I'm actually supposed to be away with my family for that. So I'm going to have to drive back and forth. It's going to be a little hectic for me. But whatever. It always happens this way, right? There's got to be conflict, right? There's got to be like scheduling conflict. It's just part of my life, but whatever. So there's that. And then on the 30th, up in Detroit, like we kind of mentioned earlier in the show, is that there's this second Democratic debate and the Sunrise Movement is calling for these mass protests. And assuming that they develop in the way that it looks like they're going to develop, I'd really like to be there for that. I'd like to be there for that. And I was mentioning this to Sean beforehand, and Sean's going to kind of look into it, whether he's going to be able to go out there.
I think we should say fuck it and go. Because
what's that? Say fuck it and go?
Yeah.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday to you.
I mean, it's like it's in the middle of the week. My parents will probably be working. So I don't anticipate going out and having a big party on my 30th. But I'll be dropping this bomb on them.
Where are you going to be? I'm in Detroit. What? Are you going to be where?
Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. So there you go. So some cool stuff coming up. That I get plugged into. I got a couple of beer release news this week. Free Will Brewing has got tomorrow. We got two new releases coming out. The first one is called it's actually Race Against Time, as they've come up before. This is Double Race Against Time. And this is a collab with the Chatty Monks Brewing, and it's a double IPA made with oats, oranges, vanilla, and milk sugar. It comes in about 8.5 ABV. It's kind of like your orange creamsicle-y kind of brew. I had it last year. It was really tasty, really good, very kind of like, you know, get ready for the summer kind of beer. And the second one is where are we gonna go? Oh, Saison 1387. All right, I actually didn't open that one up to look at it to read it for you. And this is part of their latest Saison that is coming out of their sour cellar. And it is basically it's another collab, and this one is with Platform Beer Company. And it's a Saison fermented with the house Saison yeast, aged in barrels with, you got to help me with this, Brettanomyces. How do you say that one? The
Brettanomyces.
Yeah, Brettanomyces. I'm going to say Brett. Filled with peach aromatics, tasting notes of pineapple and lemon custard, the dry and refreshing finish at 6.3% ABV. That's also available this Saturday, but that's available in the big bottles, the Bombers. So you get the 4-pack cans of Double Race Against Time, or you can pick up the Bombers for the Saison 1387. Both going to be available tomorrow at Free Will. And the last thing I got for today, this kind of came up for this. I remember this was on my radar a while ago, but then just kind of came back, is that got a new documentary that's just been released called Poured in PA. And it's basically a film that was it's produced by Harrisburg-based GK Visuals. Do you know them, Sean?
Yeah, I know them. Lauren Gallagher is co-owner of that.
Okay.
So is Nate Gursky.
Okay.
And they also do a lot of video and consulting for every single insane Republican out here in central Pennsylvania.
That's what I thought. That's what I was wondering, because I was like, I saw that, you know, and I what's that?
They get a lot of their contracts through Ray Zaborni and Red Maverick, where they work closely with Red Maverick candidates. So they did a lot of video work for Scott Wagner last year. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that. So
yeah, it's kind of, that's what I thought when I first saw it was GK GK Visual. I was like, I'm pretty sure that Sean has brought them up before. And
full disclosure, Lauren was my intern advisor at AppScuff.
Yeah. Full disclosure. Yes. Yes, that's right. She worked for my union.
Yeah, Lauren's really good at what she does.
Yep.
And like, they put a really good documentary around the first time. With like looking at the craft beer in Pennsylvania, and this is a continuation of that documentary.
That was the question I was going to have for you. Yeah. because I could have sworn, I was like, I could have sworn there was another documentary that was out before.
Yes, they did a documentary about like 3 or 4 years ago.
Okay,
so like they were actually filming at one of the beer releases I was at. Mm-hmm. Before I started working at Pizza Boy, and when Terry had Intangible Ales going, I went to one of their releases, and yeah, like we were in like that photo and stuff like that. It was a really good documentary. I'm actually looking forward to watching this. Craft beer has like exploded.
Yeah.
In Pennsylvania. I mean, like we're second to California, which is pretty freaking crazy.
Yep. Yep.
Considering exactly. California has like twice the amount of people that we do.
Right. Exactly. And I think that, you know, that's kind of, yeah, exactly. And it looks like there's 50 different breweries are going to be featured in this documentary. Yep, there you go. Poured in Pennsylvania. You can check out their if you go to the links in the show notes, it'll take you to their page. There's some kind of preliminary video that you can check out. There's a trailer there. It's all there. If you are an Amazon Prime member, it streams for free right now. So you can just go, and again, there's a link in the show notes there. You can stream it free on Amazon Prime right now. That's one of the things I'm hoping to do this weekend, to check it out. I do have to say is like the fact that Dick Yuengling was featured fairly prominently in the in the trailer, it just gave me a little bit of a bitter taste in my mouth. But you know, I don't think it's all about him. It better not be, or else I'm gonna be pissed.
I mean, but also, I mean, like that's the movement in craft beer, though. I mean, the Craft Beer Alliance changed their standards of what craft beer is, A, because of Sierra Nevada, Stone, and the big monoliths out in California expanding on the East Coast, but also because to bring in Dick Yuengling and bring in Sam Adams for their lobbying power. Because the more money that they bring in to the Craft Beer Alliance, the Craft Beer Alliance obviously is a trade association, so like that money goes towards lobbying.
Right.
Like, a lot of that money goes towards lobbying and representing the craft beer industry in Capitol Hill and in Harrisburg and state houses all across the country.
Well, there you have it.
It's all about the money.
It's all about the money. Yep. So again, Poured in PA, streaming free on Amazon Prime now. So anything else for the good of the order, Sean?
Do I want to end it on a sad note?
What the hell?
Dave Davies from WHYY just released this. Today is my last day as a senior reporter for WHYY. I'm calling an end to 37 years of daily reporting on state and local politics and government and broadcasting and print. For the past 9 years, I've been covering politics at WHYY while carrying a substantial load at Fresh Air with Terry Gross. And it's time to restore sanity to and work life balance to my days. But I'm not disappearing. I'll continue to work for Fresh Air and will consider freelancing opportunities and broadcasting as they come. I'm still deeply committed to public broadcasting. I am a sustaining member of WHYY and expect to be drafted on air fundraising soon. I'm inspired by the talent and hustle and creativity of the young reporters I see coming up in public radio and beyond. Looking forward to hearing and reading their stuff on we go. So I guess.
Wow. Dave Davies stepping down.
Yeah. I mean, Dave. Yeah. An institution himself, pretty much.
Yeah, indeed. And, you know, he's so he and really he was has been at the forefront of, you know, the insistent kind of like, you know, digging local reporting down in Philadelphia for a long time now. So, yeah. Well, good on him. Best wishes to Dave Davies. Raging Chicken's always looking for people. We don't pay very well. But we do what we can, man. We do what we can. All right. So, sayonara, Dave Davies. Good luck to you on moving forward. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press, talking to Sean Kitchen, our Capital Muckraker in chief. And once again, it's been great spending some time with you. And we'll be back next week. Hopefully, we're going to shoot for Friday, but, you know, it's summertime, so anything goes. Talk to everybody. See ya!
If we had had confidence that the president clearly did not commit a crime, we would have said so. We did not, however, make a determination as to whether the president did commit a crime. The introduction to the volume 2 of our report explains that decision. First, the opinion explicitly permits the investigation of a sitting president because it is important to preserve evidence while memories are fresh and documents available. Among other things, that evidence could be used if there were co-conspirators who could be charged now. And second, the opinion says that the Constitution requires a process other than the criminal justice system to formally accuse a sitting president of wrongdoing.